Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Thrash awaiting the punt from Nick Harris.
It's a beautiful
booming spiral. James going to take it at his own 13. Has a little bit of running room to the right, to the 20, 25, 30. Off to the races, 40, 45, 50.
A terrific block. I think it was by Sean Taylor. Man, he just decked one of the Lions, and the guy's out.
Rising star in the NFL is dead, cut down by gunfire less than a day after someone shot him in his own home. Washington Redskins player Sean Taylor died from his injuries early this morning.
Backed up on their own 14 from the shotgun, Roethlisberger back to pass, looking, getting flushed to the right, scrambling, moving to his right, throws it down the sideline. Hayes is there. It is incomplete. He is just trailed by who?
Taylor.
Man, he's the train if the other guy's the bus.
Boy, that was some piece of nice defense there. You'll only find better coverage than that.
The 24-year-old was airlifted to the hospital early Monday. According to a family friend, Taylor's girlfriend called 911 after someone broke through the couple's bedroom door and fired two shots.
McNabb wheels on a play-action fake. Looking left, fires. It is incomplete. Sean Taylor.
Decked
him. He sure did. Knocked the ball right out of the hands of Reggie Brown, who said, did you get the license plate of that man?
Oh, I love that kind of hit. I mean, he won't want to catch that ball in front of Sean Taylor again. Interesting, Sonny.
Oh, man, on the replay.
Oh, that's a great hit.
In 2004, Taylor, a former All-American at the University of Miami, was a first-round draft pick for the Redskins.
Get off the field here. Get off the field.
Owens and Glennon to the right. Bledsoe back to pass. Steps up. Going deep. Caught ball. T.O. is leveled by Sean Taylor. And he's slow getting up, but he's up.
Boy, he got hit. Taylor put the leather to him, baby.
Wow, what a shot.
That's what you call hitting.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
I'm Lauren.
I am Ken.
And this is Paradise After Dark.
Dark.
Paradise After Dark is a bi-weekly podcast covering true crime,
unsolved mysteries,
missing people,
urban legends, and the dark side of the Sunshine State. But first, if you'd like to support the show, please subscribe to us at patreon.com/Paradise After Dark Podcast.
On Patreon, you'll have access to weekly bonus episodes, early and ad-free episodes, our monthly spin-off show, Vacation Edition, discounts on our merchandise, and more.
You can also check out our website at paradiseafterdark.com for our latest episodes, links to social media, our Etsy store, and a special little donate button if you just want to help out the show once.
If you have a question, a Florida case suggestion, or you'd just like to chat, please email us at paradiseafterdarkpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Get Vocal for a live chat. All you got to do is go to the website, getvokl.com, sign up and search for Paradise After Dark. Go ahead and subscribe to our channel and come hang out with us on Thursday nights.
Yeah, you'll find yourself on Get Vocal. There's so many different like people and podcasts or just shows on Get Vocal. So you can really get involved in stuff. I know after we do our show, it's like we stay separate and we do our show so we don't echo in some certain things. But the part that's funny is next thing you know, we're usually joining somebody else's group in different shows. There's a lot of podcasters.
It's interesting. I really like it.
And Thursday night is the true crime night, really.
Thursday is the true crime lineup. Yep.
Exactly. So Thursday nights is a great time to come see us and several of your other favorite podcasters.
Yep.
Speaking of other favorite podcasters, we have a little bit of news to handle here.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we have found out this week that the True Crime Podcast Festival that we were appearing at next month in July has been postponed and they do not have a new date yet. So
yeah, stay tuned because hopefully with a little luck, we'll get a new date and get a promo code if you're interested in going. I'm stoked. I'm ready. I want to go to Kansas City. So it's like, I want to go.
I know. But CrimeCon is still on for
October.
October 30th to November 1st. We will be there. We will be on Podcast Row. And if you'd like to attend, go ahead and buy your ticket. Use promo code Paradise20 for 10% off.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great time in Orlando.
You don't have to buy the whole weekend pass either. You can just get a one-day pass. Or, I mean, you can buy individual days too, can't you?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So make sure that, you know, if you just want to go for one day and check it out. But I gotta tell you, if you're really into true crime and it's Florida, it'll be October. So it'll be a great time to be here, but
yeah, it'll still be hot, but not as hot.
Not as hot. Exactly. But, it's a really a good time. You'll meet so many people, so many different podcasters or just people on, what's the one guy I can never think of his name? You love the song he did with the Grinch. Keith
Morrison.
Yeah, exactly. So you'll see guys like him. You'll see, what's the Cajun guy you love too?
The who?
Rody Sanchez.
Rody Sanchez.
Yeah, just guys like that. I love Rody Sanchez. We met Nancy Grace. So if you really like, true crime, CrimeCon.
CrimeCon is the place to be. That
is the place to be. Coming October, please.
And it's also our first year being featured on Podcast Row. So that's really exciting for us.
That's a big deal. That is a BFD for us.
I'm so excited.
All right. So, Lauren, tonight, what are we talking about?
We are talking about the murder of Sean Taylor.
This was a sad, sad day for me.
So.
And several thousand other people.
Sean Taylor was born April 1st, 1983 in Miami, Florida, and he died on November 27th, 2007, one day after being shot by intruders during a botched burglary inside his Miami area home. Now, if you're not a football fan, you're probably not going to recognize the name Sean Taylor, but if you pay any attention to football at all, this was a big deal. Before we get into the crime, I want to talk a little bit about who Sean Taylor was. Like I said, some of our listeners may not follow football as closely as we do, especially the Washington Redskins. But
well, before we get there, I just want to tell people I'm a huge Redskins fan, which is odd because I was born in Indiana and raised in Indiana and moved to Florida when I was 12. And everybody's like, well, why are you Redskins fans? So I got to tell a story. Now, in my very first football game I ever watched in its entirety from start to finish was the 1983 football season. It was actually in 1984, January of 84. The Redskins played the Raiders in the Super Bowl. I believe it was Super Bowl 18. Now, we got our asses whooped because Marcus Allen lit us up that season, or that game, I should say. The final score was the Raiders beat us 38-9. But the best part about this story was my dad's best friend at the time was a Raiders fan. So my dad, of course, being, you know, one of those people that doesn't want to root for the same guy, he wanted to root for the Redskins. Now, I don't think my dad was ever a Redskins fan. So he dressed me up in a little t-shirt that said Joe Theismann, put a little number 7 on it. So I was Joe Theismann that game, and I rooted for the Redskins, and I rooted for them the whole entire game, even though they were getting their asses beat.
How old were you? Did you already say that?
January of 84, I would have been 8 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, I would have just turned 8 in October. So I was 8 years old, and I rooted for the Redskins, and I have rooted for them ever since. Now, obviously, we've been struggling ever since. So, I mean, we've had some good years, but that year there, I mean, I just don't know how we lost that game when you go back and watch the game, but it was actually held here in Tampa. It was actually in Tampa, Florida, the Super Bowl was. It was up at the Bucs Stadium.
Were the Bucs even around in 84?
Yeah. Yeah. Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yeah. It was held in Tampa Stadium.
I'm going to have to fact check that.
All right. Hang on a second. I'm going to do it right now.
I thought they were a newer team.
No. Yeah. They began in 1976. The Buccaneers were established in 1976, and they posted in ignoble 0-14 record, or not 0-14, 0-14 record in the initial season in the NFL. So yeah, the Bucs were there. That's why I said they played in Tampa.
Okay.
So, I mean, I can't imagine where else they would have played in Tampa if the Buccaneers, it's not like they're going to play at the Rays stadium. The Rays kind of a newer team.
That's weird. I just thought they were a newer team. But anyway.
They have new outfits. Because the old outfit was that like creamsicle outfit, the orange. So
back to Sean Taylor. Sean Taylor was the son of Pedro Taylor, chief of police in Florida City, and Donna Junior. At age 3, his parents divorced, and Sean went to live with his great-grandmother, Olga Clark, in Homestead, Florida. He later moved to his father's home at the age of 11. From then on, he was primarily raised by his father and stepmother, Josephine Taylor, in the Richmond Heights area of Miami-Dade County. He originally began his high school football career at Miami Killian High School, a public school, but was transferred to Gulliver Preparatory School, a class prep school, where he was a 3-sport star in football, track, and basketball.
Super athlete.
At Gulliver Prep, Taylor played both sides of the football field, running back on offense and defense back and linebacker on defense. He helped Gulliver win the Florida Class 2A state championship in the year 2000. According to his Wikipedia page, Taylor rushed for 1,400 yards and a state record 44 touchdowns on 2 separate occasions, rushed for more than 200 yards during Gulliver's state playoff run. He also compiled more than 100 tackles during the season and scored 3 touchdowns, 2 receiving and 1 rushing, in the state title game victory over Marianna High School. Taylor was considered the number 1 prospect in Miami-Dade County by the Miami Herald. He was also rated the nation's number 1 skill athlete and an All-American by Super Prep. Taylor was also an Orlando Sentinel Super Southern team selection, the number 1 athlete on the Florida Times Union Super 75 list, and rated the number 1 player in Florida by the Gainesville Sun.
He was just badass.
He was and this is all still while he's in high school.
High school, yeah, exactly. And I mean, in high school you can be glorious, but then when you get into college, now Taylor was recruited to play the Miami Hurricanes football team at the University of Miami in 2001. So he was also at the time a member of the Hurricanes track and field team, competing in such events as the 100 meter and the 200 meter. So when he's a badass in high school, then you get recruited to Miami.
A badass in college.
Now you're playing college and your colors shine true. So now when he was in Miami, in his sophomore year at Miami, he had 4 interceptions during the season basically 4 interceptions, and he was averaging 31 yards per interception. So when he intercepted the ball, he would run for 31 yards. That's a huge average. And then his junior year, he had 10 interceptions, but he was only averaging 18 yards, but he more than doubled his interceptions. And in college, he was also used at Miami. He was used as a receiver and on defense. So he was playing defensive back, a safety, and he was also playing a receiver. So, and then following his 2003 season with University of Miami, he finally announced that he was going to enter the NFL draft. So, of course, in the NFL draft, the Washington Redskins selected Taylor in the first round of the 2004 NFL draft. He went number 5. So of all the players that year, he was the 5th one picked. And he was the first of a record 6 players selected in the first round from the University of Miami. And on July 27th of 2004, the Washington Redskins signed Taylor to a 6-year, $18.5 million contract that included a $13.4 million signing bonus. So all those high school and college accolades are starting to pay off a little bit. And on August 9th of 2004, he made his professional NFL debut in the Redskins preseason opener as part of their second unit defense against the Denver Broncos. Yeah, chumps. Sorry, Denver fans. He made his professional regular season debut in the Washington Redskins season opener against Tampa Bay Buccaneers and assisted on 1 tackle in their 16-10 victory. So this pretty much just kind of starts him off to pretty hellacious career that he had, even though it was cut short. Now, during his time with the Redskins, Taylor had quite an impressive career. So according to his player stats on NFL.com, He finished his rookie season in 2004 with 76 combined tackles, 60 of which were solo, 9 pass deflections, 4 interceptions, 2 forced fumbles, and a sack in 15 games and 13 starts. Now, Taylor finished the 2005 season with 70 combined tackles, 60 solo, a career 10 pass deflections, 2 interceptions, 2 forced fumbles, and a sack in 15 games and 15 starts. So now he's boosted up to being a starter, which I got to say our 2005 season was the bomb diggity. I believe that was the year that we beat the Giants 1 out of 2 games. We beat the Cowboys in both divisional games. We beat the Eagles in both divisional games. Mark Brunell was a quarterback. He was killing it that year. We had Joe Gibbs as a coach. I mean, we had all these stars, Clinton Portis. So, I mean, we had a hellacious team. So that was one of our glory years. We ended up finishing that year 10-6. We made it to the second round of playoffs too. So we lost to the Seahawks, damn Seahawks. So carrying on to October 15th in 2006, Taylor collected a season high 10 combined tackles, 8 of which were solo, and deflected a pass during a 25-22 loss to the Tennessee Titans. Now, he did finish the 2006 season with a career high 111 combined tackles, 86 solo tackles, 6 pass deflections, 3 forced fumbles, and an interception in 16 games and 16 starts. Taylor was also named as a first alternate to the NFC's 2007 Pro Bowl team. When the NFC's first choice for safety, Brian Dawkins of the Philadelphia Eagles, chose not to play in the Pro Bowl due to an injury, Taylor was named to the vacated spot, and this was his first and only Pro Bowl appearance. Now, prior to the start of the 2007 season, Sports Illustrated named Taylor the hardest-hitting player in the NFL. All that mumbo-jumbo there, if you go back and listen to the stats, you don't realize how much of a quarterback's nightmare this guy was.
Yeah.
He had 2 interceptions from Brett Favre in one game, and he had Brett Favre just twisting in the wind, because that is pretty rare that he would get picked off twice by the same defender in the same game.
Yeah.
And so when he was on the field, quarterbacks were nervous. They shook a little bit. This guy was on the field. He was that player that you wanted to watch. He was fun to watch. He was good with the teams, but mainly the defense, you know, and of course, Mark Brunell, that was when he was sort of shining a little bit. So when Mark Brunell got off the field, it was like, okay, we have a shot with Taylor on the field. We can get the ball back and we can win. I mean, the three years that he played, his stats were really great, even though the 2005 season was our best season as 10-6, went to the playoffs. The year before, not so great. Year after, not so great, and not so great since then. But I'm still a Redskins fan, still love him. So that was pretty much his highlight. You know, that was the guy he was on the field.
So although there's no doubt that Sean Taylor was an amazing football player, he was no angel off the field. So he had a drunken driving charge in October of 2004 following a birthday party in Washington, D.C. for former Redskins receiver Rod Gardner.
Another great receiver.
But that charge was later dismissed. During his time with the NFL, he skipped part of the NFL's mandatory rookie symposium. What's a rookie symposium?
Oh, I think that's like a introductory thing where you go in and it's a symposium where they talk and they kind of get you all set up and scheduled, and they basically tell you how things are going to work.
Okay. Orientation for the NFL.
There you go.
So he fired 2 agents because he didn't like his contract.
How the hell could you not like the contract he got?
He refused to return Coach Joe Gibbs' calls during the offseason.
Now, that would make me angry, too, because Gibbs was awesome.
And he was fined at least 7 times for late hits, uniform violations, and other on-field infractions.
He was a hard-hitting guy.
In 2005, he was accused of pointing a gun during a fight over an all-terrain vehicle near his Miami home. A legal battle that ended a year later when he pled no contest to 2 misdemeanors and was sentenced to probation.
So he was a star on the field and not so much of a shining star off the field.
Right.
But this did come to a bit of a conclusion because in May of 2006, his daughter Jackie was born and everyone around him suddenly watched Taylor mature and clean his act a little bit. He started to grow up. Time to man up. Now that you got a baby.
Yeah.
So according to an article on FoxSports.com, Taylor was having the best season of his career on the field and had stayed out of trouble off the field since the birth of his daughter. So he was becoming a leader, and his teammates elected him to the players committee that meets regularly with Coach Gibbs. He was kind of a wild child like myself, said New York Giants tight end Jeremy Shockey, who played with Taylor at the University of Miami and worked out with him in the offseason. But life changed for Sean after he had his baby girl. Fatherhood really changed him. He grew up and matured. I think that happens in a lot of people, not just football players, but I think a lot of times two things will help straighten a guy out real fast. Military and childbirth. In most cases.
Yeah.
In most cases. Not all the time, but most cases.
So on November 18th of 2007, burglars pried open a window at Taylor's empty home, rifled through his desk and safe, and left a kitchen knife on the bed. 8 days later, on November 26th, five men and teenagers rented a vehicle in Fort Myers, Florida, and drove to Miami, back to Sean Taylor's home. So the intent of these wannabe thugs was to burglarize his home, mistakenly believing that Taylor was in Tampa with his team playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Unfortunately for all involved, Sean Taylor had sustained a knee injury and was sitting out that game, so he was at his Miami home on that fateful night. Taylor and his girlfriend were awakened by loud noises, according to family friend Richard Sharpstein, who learned the details from Taylor's girlfriend, Jackie Garcia. Taylor told Garcia to get under the covers while he grabbed a machete that he kept for protection under his bed, Sharpstein said, according to the Miami Herald. As Garcia cuddled with the couple's infant, someone broke through the bedroom door and fired two shots, one missing and one hitting Taylor in the leg. Neither Taylor's daughter nor his girlfriend were injured in the attack. So the gunman fled immediately after firing the shots at Taylor. And Jackie Garcia, his girlfriend, called 911 on her cell phone at 1:47 a.m. Miami-Dade police found Taylor bleeding from a wound to his upper leg. The bullet damaged the femoral artery in Taylor's leg, causing significant blood loss. He was airlifted to Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami, where he never regained consciousness. So Sean Taylor died the following morning after undergoing 7 hours of surgery. He was just 24 years old.
God, I can't even imagine.
So young.
Yeah. You know, and usually when you hear of like somebody being shot, that's a fatal shot. You think of mid-mass,
headshot.
The body, headshot. Usually the arm, shoulder, legs. You don't necessarily think of those as being fatal shots.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Here, you know, I mean, you get shot in the leg and it just happens to get the femoral artery. Now, granted, that's a big artery, but not in relation to this man's legs, because he was a powerful man.
Yeah.
So I just, that blows me away that he could get shot one time in the leg and it'd be a fatal injury.
According to an article from the Washington Post, Taylor's death left the Redskins and, it seemed, much of the Washington region reeling and heartsick.
I was devastated, and well, I was pretty pissed off at the whole scenario because I knew what a star he was.
Yeah.
But here's a guy that was ready for the Hall of Fame, and because he didn't play any more than 5 years, he's never going to make it there, regardless of his accolades. Now, devastated callers jammed sports radio stations, and hundreds of fans wrote emotional posts on websites that covered the team. About 200 tearful fans gathered at the Redskins Park for second candlelight vigil in two nights, and the players and team's officials choked back tears and struggled to remain composed. Workers hung black bunting over the park's entry and painted Taylor's number 21 in white with gold trim on the grass outside of the front gate. The NFL did recognize the death of Taylor by placing a number 21 decal on the back of all NFL players' helmets during all Week 13 games. Additionally, a moment of silence was held before each game that week. The Redskins had the number 21 painted on the field at a parking lot entrance and in the Redskins Ring of Fame, all three of which became temporary memorials. The Redskins also wore the number as a patch on the player uniforms, warm-up shirts, and the coaching staff jackets, as well as unveiling a banner bearing his name and number. At the Redskins' first game during the first play after Taylor's death, the team lined up with only 10 players on the defense. As the Buffalo Bills got ready to run their first play midway through the first quarter, the man who replaced Taylor in the starting lineup, Reed Doty, stood near the coaches on the sidelines with his arms crossed. After watching while the Bills running back Fred Jackson gained 22 yards, Doty entered the next play and made the tackle. His lock at the Redskins Park was encased in plexiglass and left the same way Taylor had left it. Now, if you go to YouTube and you watch that play, you can see the emotion on the field. And normally, if you have 12 men on the field, there's a penalty. But there's no penalty for having less than 12 men, less than 11 players on the field. So you can have 11 or less. You can put one guy out there in the field if you want. You won't get penalized. More, you get penalized. But on this drive, they actually, his position stayed vacant. So they put 10 players on the field and made the play. Of course, but the Bills guy got 22 yards, which probably would have never happened in that situation. But if you go to YouTube and just watch it, it's a pretty emotional play. If you're a Redskins fan or just a football fan, and you know, you're passionate about
the background, exactly, of what's happening. Yeah,
exactly.
In the immediate aftermath, Taylor's father, Florida City Police Chief Pedro Taylor, made a statement on behalf of the family. "It is with deep regret that a young man had to come to his end so soon. Many of his fans loved him because of the way he played football. Many of his opponents feared him the way he approached the game. Others misunderstood him. Many appreciated him and his family loved him." Taylor's father also called for his son's killer to come forward. "You know who you are," Pedro Taylor said, according to the Miami Herald. "If you did it, turn yourself in. Vengeance is not mine, it's God's. He holds that in his hands."
Amen.
At first, police said they were trying to determine whether the burglary at Taylor's house just over a week prior was related to what they described as a possible home invasion and whether Taylor was a random victim or targeted by the shooter.
I can understand that, where they're not sure if it was premeditated or if it was just random.
Well, it just so happens that his house was burglarized 1 week before this happened. So, and when the house was burglarized, it was kind of a big deal. And he actually took time off. I think he missed a practice or two with the Redskins to be down in Miami, yeah, and deal with, you know, the police reports and everything for that burglary. So Miami-Dade spokesperson Robert Williams told the press, "We're going to look at everything." At first, authorities looked into the theory that the attack may have been related to the 2005 dispute between Taylor and several Miami men over his ATV. Remember, we talked about that a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the incident we just talked about where Taylor was charged with assault and he served probation.
That's where he fanned the gun out and...
Right, yes. Yeah.
Well, it didn't take very long because on November 30th, four men, Venja K. Hunt, he was 20 years old, Eric Rivera Jr., 17, Jason Scott Mitchell, 19, and Charles Kendrick Lee Wardlow, who was 18 years old, were all arrested. They were arrested in Fort Myers, Florida, about 100 miles from Miami and booked into the Lee County Jail before being returned to Miami. The part I find so sad here is these guys aren't even old enough to
They're
drink.
They're teenagers. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So Richard Sharpstein, who we mentioned earlier, a veteran Miami defense attorney, was acting as the Taylor family spokesman. And he told news outlets that the burglary that led to the fatal shooting almost didn't happen when one of the suspects heard a noise and wanted to flee. But the alleged trigger man told police that he was the cause of the noise and talked the others into continuing. "It was a botched burglary all along. It's senseless, mindless, and tragic," Sharpstein said. His information came from unreleased statements to police given by the four suspects in the case. In those statements, Sharpstein said, they indicate 19-year-old Jason Mitchell and 17-year-old Eric Rivera Jr. went to the house while the other two, Venja Hunt and Charles Wardlow, stayed outside where there was a getaway car. But another attorney close to the case, who requested anonymity, said there's additional information out there that maybe all four men were in the house at one time or another, the night of the robbery, according to the Washington Post report.
So do you think... I mean, it would make sense to me. I guess what gets me is if you're going to drive all the way over to Miami, you're going to break into this place not thinking that he's there, right? You're going to assume that he's not home, break into the place. So why would there be people waiting in the car as like a getaway car? You're not robbing a bank.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know.
I mean, if me and you decide we're going to go to the other coast and we're going to break into some houses, we're both going to go in. We're both going to get as much as we can, get out and drive away. It's not going to be a getaway car thing because they weren't anticipating being there.
They weren't anticipating Taylor being home.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, and that's one of the problems.
But you don't know if they were anticipating his girlfriend and baby being in the house.
Well, they may not have even thought of that. Maybe they figured that, you know, they would be in Tampa because it was close by. So I can't understand their logic in any possible way. I can't fathom what they've done. But what I'm saying is it doesn't make sense to me that one of them would have waited in the car as a getaway. Now, maybe they sat outside as a lookout because I got to believe that Sean Taylor was living in sort of a higher end neighborhood. It wasn't going to be the run of the mill, you know, little community house, a little two story house, or, you know, just a little three bedroom, two bath house. I got to believe it was a pretty nice house. Now, Mitchell and Rivera apparently had been involved in earlier burglary at Taylor's home, Sharpstein said. A report in the New York Times cited sources confirming the connection between the first burglary and the attempt made 8 days later. Now, cash and football memorabilia belonging to Taylor were discovered in the house of at least one of the defendants, the sources said. Sharpstein told the Times, "This wasn't a random burglary. This was a dime a dozen wannabe criminals who had been to the house before. They stole his life thinking they were going to steal a few dollars from him."
A Miami-Dade grand jury indicted all four on charges of first-degree felony murder and armed burglary in the incident and Taylor's death. Rivera, identified in the indictment as the shooter, was to be tried as an adult. Now, remember, he was only 17.
So the youngest one was the shooter.
Yes.
So.
And he seemed to be like the kind of like the ringleader of this little gang. We'll get into more of it in a minute about the actual roles of each person, but he was the one when they heard a noise and the other guys wanted to back out, he was the one that pushed them to keep going forward with the burglary.
Gotcha. All the suspects had prior arrest, according to the Lee County Sheriff's Office records. Now, Wardlow was arrested twice for selling marijuana and once for grand theft of a vehicle. Grand Theft Auto. Hunt was arrested previously on drug and trespassing charges. Mitchell had been arrested twice. Most recently was October 2007 on charges of driving with a suspended license in violation of probation. Rivera was arrested in October for trafficking cocaine and methamphetamine, and he previously was behind bars for altering the identification number on a firearm. That's a huge no-no. Now, possible links between the suspects and Sean Taylor.
One of the men charged in the slaying, Jason Mitchell, attended a birthday party a few weeks earlier at Taylor's house for Taylor's half-sister, Sasha Johnson, who lived in the Fort Myers area and also knew Rivera. She testified that Taylor gave her a purse containing $10,000 in cash at the party, which was witnessed by all the guests. Mm. Jason Mitchell's twin brother, Scotty, said Jason mowed the lawn at Taylor's house, according to the Miami Herald. And the Naples Daily News quoted a woman who identified herself as Jason Mitchell's mother as saying her son was at a birthday party at Taylor's home within the past 2 months. That event put the wheels in motion for the burglary plot, witnesses said. Rivera himself testified that some in the group thought they would be getting between $100,000 and $200,000 to split up.
I thought that's what they're going to steal?
Yes.
Jesus. Now, court documents and police reports had previously suggested five people were involved in Taylor's death, but only four were originally charged. And in May of 2008, a fifth suspect, a 16-year-old Timothy Brown, was arrested and charged with first-degree murder and burglary. Originally, all of the men were to be tried in a single trial, but several delays moved the date back further and further.
So they split up the trials.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the evidence that they found. Police found a shoe print outside of Taylor's home that matched sneakers that some in the group were wearing that night. Witnesses testified Rivera was seen driving a black rented Toyota Highlander believed to be used in the crime. And another witness said the group of five had burglary tools when they came to her house after Taylor was shot. On May 12th of 2008, it was announced the suspects, if convicted, would not face the death penalty, but may be subject to life imprisonment because the suspected gunman, Eric Rivera, was only 17 at the time of the shooting.
See, I disagree, because I think if you're willing to pull a gun and take someone's life, as far as I'm concerned, you're an adult at that point.
Well, he was tried as an adult, but I don't think in, and don't quote me, but I think that in Florida, you can't sentence a minor to death.
I think we talked about that in our Alex Crane case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the Vinja Hunt was the first to take the plea deal in May of 2008. His deal stated that he would serve 29 years in prison if he cooperated with prosecutors. Prosecutors, though, never called him to testify, which is odd. And at one point, Hunt tried to back out of his deal, but the judge wouldn't allow it.
I think they didn't call him to testify because, and I don't know exactly why, but he was proven to be not a good witness.
Okay. Maybe he wasn't going to be like that star witness they were hoping for.
Well, not a credible witness.
Exactly. That's what I meant.
So Rivera, the gunman, was convicted in his own trial in 2013 of second-degree murder and sentenced to 60 years in prison. He was also convicted of armed burglary. Now, testifying in his own defense, Rivera claimed that it was Hunt who brought the 9mm handgun and who shot Taylor. Rivera insisted that he was not told about the burglary plot until the group was driving towards Miami, and that he stayed in the car outside Taylor's house the whole time. The murder weapon was never found. Police say it was stuffed in a sock and thrown into the Everglades. According to an article on NFL.com, they believe that he was part of the burglary and was present when it occurred, said David S. Weinstein, a former federal prosecutor now in private practice. There was no eyewitness to put the gun in Rivera's hand, and that is what at least one juror needed to convict him on first-degree murder.
Let me see if I can say this right. So he's claiming that he had no idea what was going on until they got over there.
Right.
Okay, that seems to me that if you've got a guy that's testifying against you, and you're well aware of it, who's Hunt, he's testifying against you. Of course, now you're ultimately going to put the gun in his hands.
Well, he's Hunt never testified.
But that's what I'm saying. But I mean, they I'm sure they knew that he had turned state's evidence. I'm sure his attorney told him, "Hey, Hunt turned state's evidence. He's got the deal, and that's why he wants to put the gun in Hunt's hands." I mean, that seems to me, because based on everything that we see here, it looks like Rivera was, in fact, the shooter.
Yes.
But he's saying he wasn't because he was the driver that was outside.
That was his defense at trial.
Exactly. But that's the defense lawyer's job. Now, Wardlow and Mitchell were both convicted of second-degree murder and armed burglary in separate trials in 2014. And Wardlow received 57 and a half years, while Mitchell, the mastermind of the plot, was sentenced to life in prison.
"Four down, one to go," said Taylor's father, Pedro Taylor, to the Miami Herald after Wardlow and Mitchell's sentencing. Finally, in April of 2015, Timmy Lee Brown, the final defendant, pleaded guilty and agreed to serve 18 years in prison. The conclusion of Brown's case meant that all five men were charged in the slaying of the football legend. All had been convicted and will serve prison time. So there was justice.
Yeah, in this case, there was justice. All five men. Yeah. I just find it odd that it took them a while to get that last guy in there, the 16-year-old kid.
Yeah, and you know, as much as I researched, I really couldn't find a clear reason why he was arrested like 6 months later.
Well, it was probably because most of those guys in those circles aren't rats. In other words, they're not going to rat each other out. And now we do know that Hunt sort of turned state's evidence, if you will, even though he didn't testify. So I think what happens is they were just saying hush, like, hey, don't say anything. Whatever they figure out, let them figure it out. And then obviously law enforcement did their job correctly and figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a sad situation where you have this. And here's the part that bothers me is I would say it's random. I guess in some aspect it's random. You know, and I guess it seems a little flash that you're going to hand over $10,000 in a fancy purse while you're having a party. But you're already a football player, so I guess that's not too flash. They already know you're making money because you're obviously, you know.
And it was his sister.
Yeah, we know how much money he was making. But, I mean, it's very ignorant of people to think that these people have the money in their house. You know, if you sign a $13 million contract, there's a good chance that you don't have $13 million in your house.
In cash.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. I mean, we don't have money. We don't have cash in our house. So why would people assume that you break into somebody's house just because they have this big lavish house doesn't mean that the cash is there.
Yeah.
You can steal merchandise maybe and get all the stuff. Remember, OJ didn't have all his money available. They had to sell all of OJ's stuff to try to get the money. So why would they assume that? I don't know. I hate the whole scenario. Well, I hated it back then too, because he was such a dynamic player.
Yeah.
He was such a key player for the Redskins. So I'm still heartbroken about that, by the way.
It is tragic. It is.
And he leaves behind a kid, you know, a child. And that's the saddest part.
Right.
You know, the people go and do things without consideration of who they're actually affecting. And that's one of those we always talk about is, you know, you got the victim who was Sean Taylor, but there's so many other victims.
Yeah.
You know, mother, father, grandfather, grandmother. I mean, it's a very sad situation.
Yeah.
But like you said, there's justice in this case, and that's a good thing.
Yep.
Do you feel like the youngest kid that they caught 6 months later getting the smallest amount of time, you think 18 years is legitimate?
Well, and it wasn't clear what his role was in the whole situation. So I don't know on that. I really don't. I really can't say. Yeah. I don't have an opinion on that.
Well, either way, justice prevails.
Yep.
So is that it for tonight?
That's it for tonight.
All right.
Again, if you would like to support the show, please subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/paradiseafterdarkpodcast.
And check out our Etsy store for some awesome Paradise After Dark gear.
Please make sure to follow us on social media at Paradise After Dark Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and at ParadiseDark239 on Twitter. You can also email us at ParadiseAfterDarkPodcast@gmail.com.
You can also check out our website, ParadiseAfterDark.com, for our latest episodes, links to social media, Etsy store, Patreon, and our donate button.
And please make sure to subscribe to the show on whatever platform you're listening and rate and review 5 stars.
5 stars.
This really helps us branch out and reach a wider audience.
Now, can you just take a quick second and explain that? Because if we have 5 stars, that means when somebody searches true crime, like going through like for suggestions, that puts us up top of the list.
Yes. Yep.
That moves us along.
And the more subscribers we have, the more good ratings we have. There's actually charts like on Spotify, on Stitcher, on Apple Podcasts. There's like true crime charts. And we have been on and off the top 200.
It's pretty exciting for just, you know, little old you and me.
Yeah, I know. It is actually pretty exciting.
I'm stoked about Crime Con. It's just like just little old me and you.
But so, yes, it really, really does help us when you guys rate and review and subscribe. So,
yeah, please do that. And definitely, thank you for listening
to Paradise After Dark.
Dark, 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 dark.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.